Welcome to this month's special guest interview.
This month, I'm very pleased to have David Getoff as my special expert guest. David Getoff is a board-certified traditional naturopath and certified clinical nutritionist. Since 1992, he has managed a private practice in San Diego, California, in traditional naturopathy and clinical nutrition. David is an accomplished lecturer and educator. He is board certified in integrative medicine and has a very strong and eclectic educational background in a variety of healing disciplines in addition to nutrition, including homeopathy, herbology, German biological medicine, toxicology, muscle testing, and biofeedback. David is the vice president of the Price Pottinger Nutrition Foundation. He has produced several instructional and education DVDs and CDs, provides regular education classes on holistic health, and has participated as a guest on countless radio stations. One of David's favorite statements is, quote, "There is no treatment or drug which can overcome or negate the effects of a poor diet, inadequate nutrition, lack of exercise, and unhealthy lifestyle," end quote. Good morning, David, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update.
Good morning. Actually, pleasure to be here. Always love to educate people.
I know you do, and you're a great educator. Went through your site, you just have almost an infinite amount of great stuff, great literature, and just can't wait to pick your brains a little bit. But first is something a little personal about you, maybe something about your personal background, where you grew up, and how you first developed an interest in nutrition and natural medicine.
Well, I grew up in what I refer to as the Rotten Apple, New York City, Manhattan. People call it the Big Apple. I like my term better. Sometime when I was, 17 or 18, after my house burned down the wildfires back in 2007, I lost a lot of actual dates that I used to be able to take a look at. But I think when I was 17, 18, or 19, I noticed at the New School for Social Research, a independent college in New York City, Manhattan, that a medical doctor was teaching a semester-long class entitled Nutrition Against Disease. His name was Robert Giller. He's written a number of books. Don't know if he's still alive or not. And I said, nutrition against disease. I read the description, and he was using nutrition, you know, instead of drugs. And I went, that looks fascinating. So I took the semester-long course for non-credit just for fun. He was a good teacher. I now know that a lot of the things he was teaching I have found out to be incorrect, but he didn't know that. He was doing a lot of good things. Mostly what he was doing was using changes in diet, nutritional supplements, and testing for different types of sensitivities and allergies, and then having the person to limit those things, as well as hair analysis testing for trace minerals in order to help people get well from numerous conditions. And they let us do our own tests during the course, so everybody sent in hair analyses to Doctor's Data, same lab I use now, and we got to have our own results in front of us while they were going over things. He did a good job of teaching. I said, this is fascinating. Really? You can help reverse diseases without doing anything that medical doctors have been taught? This is interesting. Never, ever even considered it remotely as an occupation. I've had numerous occupations over the years, which would take way too long to go into, but it was fascinating. So I started subscribing to different magazines, Prevention, which now has become a piece of garbage because all they have is ads for the pharmaceutical company, Let's Live, a whole bunch of others. And as I learned more and more things, I realized that was the wrong way to go, and instead started subscribing to different newsletters of different medical doctors and other physicians around the country who were actually treating people, getting them well, instead of reading a magazine and telling people what worked. And then I started going to different seminars and conferences. And it was only 25 years ago that I went, you know, helping people get well is so much fun. Why don't I see what I need to do that professionally? And I already had so much knowledge that I didn't have a difficult time sitting for some board exams, you know, getting some credentials, which now I have loads of. But I always tell people, that's my toilet paper. It covers the wall. And that your credentials have nothing to do with anything. Your knowledge is the only thing that matters. And if somebody has not a single credential, but they know everything correct, they'll do a better job of helping you get well than the doctor who's got stuff all over their walls. But that's what started it, and I just never stopped.
It sounds like evidence is what switched on the intellectual genes. And can you tell us what evidence-based medicine is?
You know, evidence-based medicine is a very misrepresented term. I don't think it always was if you went back maybe 50 years. But it's a term that's now, today, and let's say for the last 25 years or so, been used by many doctors seemingly to indicate that they're using what works, regardless of what they may have been taught. In other words, a lot of professionals have observed something, and therefore there's evidence that it's worked. Many people have seen it work, whatever it may be, over and over and over again. It could be an herb or some other supplement or diet change. And therefore, since the evidence shows it's helpful, and since it isn't harmful, let's use it. In actuality, however, those who have been misrepresenting themselves as practicing evidence-based medicine are mostly referring exclusively to the evidence from published scientific research studies rather than the most more important clinical evidence of observing what works. And that's why I've trademarked my own phrase, which is results-based nutritional medicine, in the hope that using those words, you have more difficulty in misusing them and screwing them up. So technically, evidence-based medicine should mean that people are saying, look, if there's evidence that this non-harmful thing works, let's try it before we try anything harmful. But the people that are claiming to be physicians that practice evidence-based medicine are not doing that for the most part. They're only accepting evidence of published research. And I'm sorry, but Merriam-Webster would be turning over in their grave because they'd say, wait a minute, that's a misuse of the word evidence.
It's evidence that usually persuades most scientists to be convinced of a so-called truth or a certainty in science. But what about your clients, your patients, David? Does the evidence that you provide persuade them to continue on the track that you are advocating that they follow?
Oh, no. No, what persuades them to continue on is their reduction in symptoms and they're feeling much better. And of course, obviously, that is evidence. But that's not evidence I'm providing. What convinces them is them seeing how well the changes they've wanted in their body are now occurring after following my advice.
So how reliable is your procedure? In other words, I've always believed that anyone, anywhere, if they took our advice, the principles that are taught in naturopathic medicine, if you just clean up and begin to move, that there's something inside of you, about you, that's going to improve no matter who you are. Would you agree with that statement?
Certainly, if you clean things up, then you are going to get improvements. The question is, will those improvements be significant enough that's going on in your body that you'll notice them? There was a doctor that was giving a lecture once at one conference. I liked what he did. He had a picture of a character sitting on two tacks, and he said, I have something called a two-tack rule. He said, the two-tack rule is that if you're sitting on two tacks and you remove one of those tacks, you will absolutely not get 50% benefit. You will still hurt like hell. And so what happens is very often somebody will change their diet, take some supplements, and let's say they're even doing the right changes and taking the right supplements. Otherwise, it really doesn't matter. It may be that because of what's going on in their body being so severe and so chronic and so long-term, that although if we ran all sorts of very expensive comprehensive tests, we might be able to prove that what we've done has in fact made a difference to their body, they might feel no difference whatsoever. So there are definitely a lot of people out there that have changed over, are doing things better, don't see any difference, and go, this is all nonsense. And so we have to understand all the different variables that are out there, of which there are many. I mean, for just a quick example, because I just got back from 3 days at the Environmental Health Symposium, which was a whole bunch of different physicians and scientists and professors around the world coming in to give us the clinical evidence of what they found having to do with environmental health. So one of the people was presenting on some urine testing for different types of toxics. They presented three particular cases. Each of these cases, these three individuals who didn't know each other and were from different states that flew in to see this particular doctor, these three particular cases, almost all of the symptoms that these people had, which were numerous, were being caused by sleeping on a Tempur-Pedic mattress. So the memory foam that was outgassing all sorts of poisons into their environment that they were sleeping on, so for all night long they're breathing these poisons, were the problem. They happened to locate that by seeing certain chemicals higher in the urine sample, and they said, are you sleeping on a memory foam mattress? And each person, you know, individually said, well, yeah, I am. How would you know? Well, because some of the chemicals coming out of your urine come from that. We don't know how many of your problems may be due to that, but it really is a toxic substance. How about we get that out of the house and see if you notice a difference in 30 days? And in the three cases they gave, they said in under 30 days, the people were totally new people. Most of the symptoms were gone, and all they had done was gotten rid of their memory foam mattress. Now, does that mean that everybody sleeping on a memory foam mattress is hurting themselves? Yes, it does. Does it mean that everybody sleeping on a memory foam mattress is going to notice any difference if they stop? No, it doesn't. You know, so it just depends on the people. These were three cases in which they wanted to show us how significant the detrimental effects could be. And actually, I shouldn't just say memory foam, because there are some good quality, natural latex rubber, no treatments, memory foams that don't cause this. I'm only talking about, you know, the Tempur-Pedics and the ones that are not latex that have all sorts of chemicals in them. So if somebody is getting most of their problems from something like that, and we give them a different diet and some supplements, and it's not enough to overcome that, how can you overcome those poisons without getting rid of them? They might not notice any difference, but that didn't mean that what we did wasn't good for them.
Right. Now, what about the subjective experience? You said, I don't feel any different. Isn't this where the objective analysis, looking at biomarkers and things you can't possibly be conscious of, isn't that where functional medicine gets more involved than maybe conventional doctors? And they look at different biomarkers too, don't they?
Yes, functional medicine absolutely gets involved in taking a great deal of money from the patient, running humongous amounts of tests that may or may not help the patient feel any better. And I say may or may not because some of them do. But I've had many patients come to see me from functional medicine doctors in which they've told me, yeah, they ran $10,000 worth of tests and given me a bunch of supplements. I don't notice any difference. And they start working with me and we see major differences. Now, hopefully those same people they came from have helped lots of other people. I'm not putting them down and saying that they don't help anybody. It's just that another doctor that I never trained with, but he was at many of my autism conferences I used to attend from Defeat Autism Now, he said the three most important statements in medicine, if you intend to be good at what you do, and he wasn't saying it as a joke, but of course everybody laughed, were treat your patient, not the labs, treat your patient, not the labs, and treat your patient, not the labs. And after that, he said, and the corollary to that is listen to your patient, not the labs, and repeat that three times. Because somebody will come into the doctor, they'll run a bunch of labs on them, and the doctor will say, there's nothing wrong with you. Well, but I feel horrible. Well, yeah, you may feel horrible, but your labs say there's nothing wrong with you, so I'm going to refer you to a psychiatrist because obviously it's all in your head, when it's rarely in their head.
Okay, speaking about the head, how much does attitude play a role in all of this? And what does a person need to get to you before anything else? Like, there's a lot of sick people out there, and it seems like you and I are always preaching to the choir, people that already have an interest. But why are there so many people out there in the mainstream that have absolutely no interest in anything that we're talking about, including our philosophy?
I can only answer that by saying that we have been brought up, and during our upbringing we're being conditioned, that the professional who you are supposed to go to when you are ill in any way, shape, or form, is your doctor. Your doctor has an MD after their name. Most people don't even know what a DO or any other credential is. They only know MD, medical doctor. And that's the person that you go to. And they don't realize that doctors, unless we're talking about emergency surgery or any kind of surgery, for removing something or setting a bone, that they don't really know how to get you well. They only know how to suppress a symptom. And so if you were brought up for your entire life knowing that when you have a problem, you go to the doctor, doctor says, well, you know, hey, this is the drug for you, and you get that drug, and it makes you feel a little bit better, and you don't realize that there's something else available that can help your body heal the problem. You won't need the drug anymore. You'll feel better than you did with the drug. If you don't realize that, then it doesn't get there. I had a patient 6 months ago who said, I'd love to get my husband in to see you, but when I asked him, he said, honey, I don't do prevention, okay? It's very simple. I don't do prevention. If I get sick, I'll go to my MD. And she told me this, and I said, do me a favor. I don't want you to get into an argument with your husband, so make sure you tell him this came from me, that I asked how he was and, you know, was I ever going to meet him, and you told me that he said I don't do prevention. Tell him that when you mentioned that to me, I said, actually, that's not true. That's not true at all. Tell your husband from me that I say he does a huge amount of prevention, and I really want to know why he thinks his car is more important than his body. Because if he wants to continue to be able to tell people he does no prevention, then the single preventive thing that he does all year long, he's going to have to stop, or he won't be able to keep on saying he doesn't do prevention. Tell him, from me, he is no longer allowed to have the oil changed on his car. Because there's never a symptom. That's 100% preventive procedure. And she said, I love that. And she told him, and of course he said, you know, he's right. I do prevention. And, yep, I'm still not going to do it on my body. So, you know, what do? You got ignorant people who don't understand how many of the things they may get, because they don't have a crystal ball as they get older, they could prevent by learning some things now. And, you know, people look back, you know, I don't know if you've read this, but a lot of people have, that when they got cancer, it was the biggest change in their life, that it helped them because it pushed them into doing some things, assuming they went holistic, at least partly, that they never would have done, and now they're healthier than they were before. But, you know, it's too bad that some people have to be kicked in the head in order to make changes that would benefit them starting right whenever they start to do them and having them start so late.
Yes, it's sad. What is your advice to someone who has a family member and they might have a strong dedication, and I'm talking not about the family member, but the person. They love health, they love fitness, they love whole foods, they take supplements, they see a naturopath like you, but their family member, their mom, dad, sister, brother is dying right before their eyes. They won't take advice. They don't even want advice. Anytime they mention anything about health, the person runs away. What is your advice for a person in that situation?
Well, the first question and the most important question is, if there were a way for you to improve your health, but it wasn't a way that is currently known by you or the people you're visiting, would you want to know that? And if they say, I'm going to the best person, no, you're not answering my question. Please, this is very simple. If there were a way to greatly improve your health that was different from what you're currently doing, that would do a better job, would you want access to that information? And if they say, nope, I'm doing what I'm doing, then stop knocking your head against the wall. There are people that are like that. Leave it alone. But if their answer is, well, of course, if there was, I would want to, but I don't think there is. My doctor says these people are all nuts. Then I devoted a part of my website specifically for them. It's the button that says In Search of Unknown Facts. And the entire purpose I put that button up there about a year or two ago was because of how many of my patients and students said exactly what you just said. They said, you know, I mean, I mentioned what I do to people on my body and how I've eaten differently and I'm taking other things and how much better I'm feeling. And they say, you're a nut. You know, I've asked my doctor about this stuff. I'm not interested. It's silly. And I say, well, ask them if they could massively improve their health with things they currently don't know about, would they be interested? If they say no, stop. There's no argument to be had. If they say, of course I would, I just think it's all nonsense, then send them to my website, have them push on the button that says In Search of Unknown Facts, listen to me talk about that particular thing for 30 minutes or so, and then have them call you afterwards and ask you, or you ask them, so now that you've listened to what Mr. Yadoff had to say, would you like to be in the 1% of the population that finds things out 10 or 20 years earlier? Or would you rather be in the 99% that finally goes, oh my goodness, we've been doing things wrong for 2 decades and we just learned it? I always want to be in the 1% or less than 1%. And unless they want to be there, you're, you know, talking to a brick wall.
Yes. Thanks very much for that. That's most helpful. Now, you're the vice president of the Price Pottinger Foundation. Of course, I've read Nutrition Against Disease many, many times and love the work. But I did meet Lorne Cordain, you know, who's moving this paleo movement forward, and that ties in, according to him and many others like him, anthropologists, the ancestral, traditional, ancient diet, hunting, gathering, no dairy, no grains, no agriculture. So how would you say that the Weston Price theorems and principles compare to the paleo diet in the format that is being advocated by Lorne Cordain, if you've read his material and you know him?
Yeah, I know Lorne Cordain's material and Eads' materials, and actually the book I like best of all the various people out there is Mark Sisson's The Primal Blueprint. Actually, there are a whole bunch of differences, because when Weston Price traveled around the world, he found that all these different civilizations that he lived with for a long time each to study what they were eating after he determined their health was exceptional, they were all eating differently because, of course, there are different fish available in different parts of the world, different animals, different birds, depending on the climates. And so they ate very differently from one another. I mean, obviously there were similarities. Nothing was preserved. Nothing was refrigerated or frozen. There was no electricity. Everything, in many cases, a lot of stuff was eaten raw that we cook. There were no GMOs. There were no hybridization. Everything was gathered from the land. Nobody bought anything from the store. But the availability of different animals, different fish, different birds, different plants that they could gather. Some of them did plant some things. Very, very different. Whereas paleo, true paleo, not what a bunch of people have bastardized it into, but true paleo means how we ate, and of course we don't have a time machine, back in the Paleolithic era. That was completely pre-agriculture, and so any time somebody would eat a fruit, it would be a wild fruit, a crab apple, something that wasn't even very sweet. They'd only be able to eat it for the few weeks of the year that it was available. After that, it was gone. These people that have paleo cookbooks where they have people eating fruits and vegetables every day, that's not paleo. I mean, they're using the word, but it's not. Paleo was mostly animal and very, very little of any kind of plant-based stuff because there wasn't much of anything around, and they knew that if they ate a plant-based diet, you know, even for a day or two, that they'd be hungry in another hour because it doesn't hold you. There aren't a bunch of fats and proteins in it. And so, you know, they would only use that if they had no choice, most likely, because it wouldn't hold them all day. But as far as the comparison, they're quite a bit different. There were certainly tribes, and of course, the even groups, you know, that we've got really good research on, like the Hunzas, that had their own animals, their own goats, that milked them, that made cheese, that made kefir. So a lot of things that would not have happened in paleo, they didn't have any domesticated animals. There were domesticated animals. There was some amount of gardening. There sure as hell wasn't any fermentation in paleo times. But, you know, in some of the tribes, not all of them, but a couple of them did fermentation. So there were some pretty big differences. The biggest similarity was that everything was gathered from the land, and none of it was hybridized, none of it was genetically modified, and it wasn't out of a refrigerator, freezer, or a package.
So do you think that the current diet, the SAD diet, is incompatible with human genes today?
I do think that our current, you know, we call it the SAD diet, standard American diet, is incompatible with our genes. I think one of the reasons that almost everybody ends up dying of either cancer, heart disease, or complications of diabetes, I mean, those three together is most of it, whereas it used to be that if you lived to be, let's say, 60 to 100, you died of old age. They didn't know why, and you didn't wake up. Whereas now, same ages, but now we're dying either of side effects of drugs, which is currently the second leading cause of death, or the other three I just mentioned. That's the biggest difference. But yes, I would say that eating foods that never existed on the planet, eating genetically modified foods, eating foods that have been massively denatured or changed so that they ship well, that doesn't jive with our DNA. That's, you know, some of the DNA scientists say that it takes, they believe it takes, I don't know how we're going to research this and prove it, somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 or 50,000 years for the body to totally adapt to a new food source. And here we're eating foods that have been hybridized and genetically modified. They haven't been here for 200 years, much less 50,000. So yeah, I think it is incompatible with our DNA for long-term health.
Do you think that in the same way we have benefited from science in many ways today, just the way that we live and the quality of life that we're experiencing, like say even just discoveries in, say, sanitation. Now, thinking of that in mind, do you think it would be possible, if you temper the research with goodwill and morality, that it would be possible to genetically modify food in such a way, with the right testing protocols and everything that was satisfactory with health in mind, not profit? Do you think it would be possible to improve on nature?
That's a very good question. I like to consider myself being massively open-minded, so I don't ever want to say something is impossible. I would say it's not likely, because if in fact, which I'm not sure it is a fact, but if in fact it takes thousands of years for our DNA to adapt to a completely different type of food that has never existed on the planet Earth, and if we all of a sudden make something different, the question is, would we be able to do that if we were trying, if the ethics were there, et cetera, in a good way? I don't know. So, for example, if some of the genetic scientists that occasionally I'll hear talk say, well, if only instead of trying to make something Roundup resistant and putting all sorts of chemicals in it, or putting Bacillus thuringiensis genes into it, which are toxic to us, if instead what they were doing was trying to increase its protein content or increase its disease resistance, would that be able, if done correctly and then tested correctly before it got on the market, which of course they're not doing any pre-market testing, if that was done, might we be able to come up with some genetically modified foods that, if tested on different animals and eventually on people, didn't cause all of the massive problems that the current ones are causing that the public is not being told about? I don't know. I would like to say it might be possible, but nobody's trying to do it. Or if they are trying to do it, that's not what we're finding out. You know, Professor Cerolini, who I've loved listening to and who presented at the conference here, he's the only person that's ever done long-term animal testing. So he did two-year rat studies and proved massive tumors and all sorts of problems for Roundup grains and Roundup itself. And Monsanto sued him. They said, you've done your studies wrong. They made them retract the information. They pulled it out of the journal it was in. And he, because he had the backing, thank goodness, redid the study with all the minor changes that they wanted, none of which would have changed anything, and it got the exact same results, republished it, and so he's been vindicated. But These are massive, massive problems. But, of course, we're talking about things that were genetically modified to have Roundup in them or to have Bacillus thuringiensis in them. And what you and I are now talking about is, no, let's forget about that. How about if the genetic modification was used to maybe make something have more protein or simply be more disease resistant or maybe produce a little bit more without hurting something? Could it be done in such a way that it would actually be beneficial? I don't know.
I'm thinking more like a Star Trek replicator with SNPs in mind, where you could put your thumb on a detection technology and it would instantly measure your genome, and then you could replicate a food that would be absolutely or ideally almost perfect to help sustain you. Because isn't that our challenge? It's about supplying our biological demand. Like, let's get into vitamins now. How do you know what to take? And like you personally, David, do you need 200 milligrams of magnesium or 280 or 360 or 1,000? How do you know exactly how much you need of what? That's what I get asked a lot.
Sure. That's actually very, very simple. Whenever I get asked that or when I'm teaching my class, I ask people. So let's say you're pulling up to the gas pump. The next place that you're going to be that you know that you can easily stop and fill your gas up on your way up to Los Angeles, let's say, is 135 miles away. Do you take out a calculator and say, okay, 135 miles, I get 21.4 miles to gallon. I've got a gallon in there. Okay, I need this many gallons in my gas tank, and that's what you put in. I certainly hope not, because if that's what you do, you're going to be stranded on the highway over and over and over again. Oh, my goodness, there was a traffic jam. Ooh, there was an accident. Oh, there was a detour. I didn't get there. Now I'm calling AAA to bring me gas. No, that would be a massively stupid thing to do. You certainly want to have lots of extra gas in there so you don't have a problem. Well, the same thing is true of your body. The studies that they've done on specific vitamins, let's take some of the B vitamins or even vitamin C, which has massive amounts of research, is that something as simple as getting a phone call where you pick up the phone and you find out your best friend was just in a car accident and is in the hospital, that could increase the amount of vitamin C your body would like to use if it was available by 2,000%. Is it there? Do you have more? How about the loud noise that just happened outside when some car, you know, hit something or a backfire? Some loud noise, and all of a sudden, because of the extra stress on your body needs twice as many of all the B vitamins that you were giving it. So I want what some people refer to as expensive urine. I want to know that my gas tank has enough extra of all the vitamins and minerals that no matter how much I need until the next time I take my supplements, it's there. And the couple of extra cents of the extras that are going to be urinated out that weren't used, that's just fine. That's the extra stuff in the tank. That's the reason that you don't want your roof to be able to just barely hold back the amount of rain or sleet or hail that hits in your area. And now you get a bad storm and it comes right through your roof. You never want the right amount of anything that isn't harmful. If it's harmful but you need it, okay, now let's try to figure out how much we need. But if it's not harmful, you don't ever want the right amount. You want so much extra that no matter how much your needs go up and down, your body has what it wants.
Yeah, that's an excellent response. You're just loaded with these incredible analogies, and I know that you have them because of your own life experience and your intellectual capacity. It's just awesome. Now, what about your own personal selection of vitamins? What are some of your favorites, and which ones do you think for you have provided you with the most protection and the most reliability in terms of science and with longevity in mind?
Well, there's two classes of vitamins. One class are the ones you're taking because the research is clear and you know they're reducing your risks of all sorts of conditions. And the others are the one where you can tell that it's helped you. My main five or my main six that I put everybody on is a really good, high-quality, high-potency multivitamin, multimineral. And then extra, because there isn't enough in there, natural vitamin A, vitamin C, natural vitamin E complex, vitamin D3 until we get their levels up to where the test shows they're fine, and fish oil. And then sometimes some additional trace minerals. But to be more specific for your question, because otherwise I'm being like the politics on TV where you ask a question, they say what they want. these debates are driving me nuts. But to be more specific to your question, I have found, and the first time I heard this was on a medical interview in New York City about 40-plus years ago where they were interviewing a doctor about vitamin C. And they asked him, you know, you use a lot of nutrients in your practice. Is vitamin C really that good? Can people just take more vitamin C and not get sick? If they're starting to get sick, can they take a bunch of vitamin C and not get sick? And he said, actually, no. Vitamin A is more important than vitamin C, but the two work best together. he had developed this little protocol that I give always to my students, and that is that within 60 minutes of when you feel, oh, damn, I'm going to be sick tomorrow, and everybody has a different feeling of what that is in your body. Within 60 minutes of when you first feel that, if you start taking about 70 to 90,000 units of vitamin A, and I do not mean beta-carotene because there isn't any vitamin A in beta-carotene, so 70 to 90,000 units of vitamin A, depending on your body weight, you can take that one time, it stays in your body all day, and 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C 4 or 5 times a day to keep that level up, you're not going to get sick. And I find, after lecturing on this for 20 years, 85 to 90% of the time that works. That's pretty darn good. So what I started doing is every time I would give a long lecture, because some of my lectures are maybe half an hour and a half, but if I'm teaching a class, it's 3 hours. If I'm teaching a seminar, you know, it's maybe 7 hours, 2 days in a row. I'm a motivated person. I can't sit there like some talk, speaking lectures and talk like this. That's just not me. So what ends up happening is at the end of the lecture, I can tell I'm a little bit hoarse. What used to happen to me years and years ago, before I heard him and before I tried this, is many of those times, if I was hoarse enough after a lecture, I would have a sore throat the next day. Now, when I get back to my office, if I, you know, I'm a little bit hoarse after a lecture, I just pop about maybe 3 25,000-unit vitamin A capsules, so 75,000 units of vitamin A, and a bunch more extra vitamin C. But the A seems to be what does it for me, and I wake up the next morning with zero hoarseness and no sore throat. So vitamin A absolutely has massively helped me to not get sore throats the day after I've lectured long enough that I'm hoarse. And the combination of the two, the A and C, almost always works if you start taking it correctly within 60 minutes of getting sick. Fish oils, I know how good they're doing with anti-inflammatory, but I don't see what they're doing. You asked me things that I can feel or see. So another something that I can feel or see is magnesium. Most people are massively deficient in magnesium. They don't realize it. And so somebody, for example, if I say, how many times during a year or a month or a week, if you get them often, do you notice a muscle twitch? Your eyebrow twitches, your lip twitches, a leg twitches, or you get a leg cramp, or any of those things, or you notice an irregular heartbeat. Those would be the three. And a lot of people will go, oh, yeah, that probably a week doesn't go by where I don't, you know, get either a cramp if I exercise too much or a muscle twitch or feel an irregular heartbeat. Well, in most people, that's a deficiency of magnesium. And if I don't keep the magnesium up, I will start feeling that. And as soon as I do, I have to bring my magnesium higher and whatever matter I need in order to do that, because some people are sensitive to magnesium. I'm one of them, and therefore I get loose stool from it easily. So sometimes I have to spray my body with a liquid magnesium so it absorbs through the skin. Another one that I can feel is a pycnogenol. Pycnogenol, which is a big, huge word for another bigger, huger word, oligomeric proanthocyanidins, that is a very strong antioxidant that, unlike some of the other antioxidants, targets the joints and the skin. And so if somebody is going out in the sun and instead of putting on an often cancer-causing sunscreen, they were to take, let's say, 300 milligrams of a good quality pycnogenol, because some of them, it says 100 milligrams in it, and the manufacturer's lying. But for most people, if they would take 300 milligrams of pycnogenol, let's say 20 minutes to 25 minutes or so, before you go out in the sun, it has just given you, depending on your biochemistry, something between an SPF 5 and 8. So in other words, if normally you would start to burn in 45 minutes and it gave you an SPF 5, then now it's 5 times 45 minutes. So therefore, I will do that rather than using a sunscreen. So instead of lathering crap on my skin, I am instead putting something into the skin in which I can get all the benefits of the sun. I'm not blocking anything, yet I'm not burning because of the antioxidant nature. So those are three that come to mind that I can see and feel and know.
Those are outstanding examples, real good rubber hitting the road insight there. Thanks so much.
Sure.
David, we're running out of time, but what is your website, and tell us a little bit about what we'll find there.
All right. Well, the easiest way to get there is just putting in my name, just davidgetoff.com. It will redirect you. The actual website is naturopath4you.com, but most people would rather just put in David Getoff, and as long as they spell Getoff correctly, which most people can spell if they don't misspell it on purpose because they just can't believe that it's really my name, but it is, davidgetoff.com will redirect you. There's a huge amount of information. There is nothing for sale. It is totally an informational website. I tell people the first places you might want to look would be either the important videos section and scroll through all of them and see if there's a title that, you know, jogs your mind and say, hey, I'd like to, you know, see what that is. the MP3 recording section, and again, see if there's a topic that really looks good, and the published article section. But you'll find all sorts of things. If somebody's trying to get you on a statin drug, cholesterol-lowering drug, the published article section, the first section of the published article section, is somewhere between 5 and 9 articles, mostly written by medical doctors, on why the heart disease and fatty acid myth and cholesterol is all garbage. So you can have those. And I try to make everything available for you to hand out. So in other words, if there's published articles up there that some doctor has given me the rights to put up on the website, it's up there as a PDF. So you can just click on the PDF, download it, have it, and print it out to somebody. You know, all these people that have copyrights all over their website, and you try to just go over something and highlight it, and it says, copyright, you can't do that. No, no, no. If it's on my website, I want you to be able to give it to other people. I'm not worried about that. So there's a whole bunch of different things. There's a gigantic number of buttons down the left. I think it's up to 35. Just take a look at the topics. Any one that you look at, it's like, I wonder what's there. Take a look. The other thing is that I am in the process, it should be happening within the next 45 days, of getting my streaming video site up. And that's because I've had a lot of people over the years that have said, you know, I don't want to spend $39.95 for this DVD of yours, or $45 for this one, or $60 for that. I just want to watch it once. I don't own the DVDs for every movie I go to see. I just spend $10 and go and watch the movie. So I decided that's a very good idea, and so I'm working with Uscreen TV and uploading all these things up there, and so people will be able to just watch one video for, you know, $10 instead of buying the DVDs for maybe $40, or you'll be able to subscribe for a month or 6 months or a year or whatever and have access to a whole bunch of them, and that's all going to happen soon. And so I put a subscribe button on my website, even though I don't like subscribe buttons, and I promise you, you're not going to be getting dunned by me. Probably, if you subscribe to my website over the next 12 months, you probably won't even get 4 emails. But if I'm going to be part of a summit, and I think it's a good one, or I wouldn't be part of it, I'll just email everybody, here, if this is a summit I'm going to be part of, you might want to listen to it and sign in. And more importantly, as soon as my streaming website goes live, I'm going to send a mass email out to everybody saying, the website's live, here's the link, take a look at it.
Excellent. Well, that sounds like a great idea. And thanks for being so generous with your website and your time today. And I want to have you back because I think we just barely scratched the surface. And we had a look at the part of the iceberg from you that presents itself above the waterline. But you have so much more and so much more depth and brilliance to share that I'd like to have you back as a guest.
Be more than happy to come back.
Oh, that's great, David. Well, thanks so much. And we always ask our guests for a final parting comment. What's on your mind today to share with the world that is listening to you right now?
Probably the most important thing that I would like people to know at the moment, only because it's just a new organization and I like what they're doing, is there's a website, learntherisk.org, which looks like they may possibly be able to get enough people together with the science to be able to educate the public that vaccines are not what they think they are and they should be against them. And so I've always been trying to teach people that stuff, but there's so many websites out there, and it's like which one to send people to and which one has the right research. They look like they're doing a good job, and I think everybody needs to understand what vaccines are and what vaccines aren't, and that's just a good website to go to.
Excellent. David Getoff is a board-certified traditional naturopath and certified clinical nutritionist. He's also the vice president of the Price Pottinger Nutrition Foundation. David, we thank you very much.
You are very welcome. Be happy to come back and we'll cover some more topics.
We hope you've enjoyed the topics discussed and our special guest interview on this edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU is produced monthly and is distributed internationally by the Corey Hawley Institute. To learn how you can subscribe to this unique and motivational audio program, please visit CoreyHawley.com or call us toll-free in the U.S. and Canada at 1-866-433-1595. That's 1-866-433-1595. This is Scott Barrett, wishing you the very best of health and fitness for life.
Represent his lifestyle. New way of life. listen. It's SNU, sing along, it's true. Yo, coming through straight, Malik with sports nutrition update. Prolong your life, live long, stay strong, for it won't be long till your time is gone. So I sing this song to pass on wisdom. Hit us up at CoreyHolly.com. Love your life, live right, things will be alright. Knowledge is key, just follow our lead. You'll see a change in heart and health, which leads to wealth and higher self-esteem. Follow your dreams and see. Follow your dreams and see.